Hey, this is Amanda, women's health dietitian.
And I'm Emily, nutritional therapy practitioner.
And this is the Are You Menstrual podcast, where we help you navigate the confusing world of women's hormones and teach you how to have healthy periods.
Each week, we will be diving into a different topic on women's health and sharing our perspective using nutrition, female physiology, and metabolic health.
Our goal is to help you wade through conflicting health information and empower you on your healing journey.
We hope you enjoy it.
In this episode, we're discussing a topic I think most women can relate to, and that's acne. I'm here with my friend and colleague, Robin Johnson, aka at Nutrition by Robin on Instagram. Robin is a functional medicine dietitian nutritionist. Her passion of using food and lifestyle as medicine found her after a personal battle and triumph with psoriasis. She specializes in helping women optimize their hormones, gut, and skin by finding the root cause to their symptoms. Robin runs a virtual private practice and is the creator of the Clear Skin Lab. Robin believes healthcare should be individualized, and that starts with each person understanding how their bodies work and what their body truly needs to thrive. So thank you for being here, Robin. I'm really excited to interview you.
I am excited to dig into this.
Robin and I have actually known each other for a little while now. I feel like, what, like a year online maybe?
Yeah, I think we really bonded over vitamin A.
Yeah, we both went through the root cause protocol, so we're both big mineral nerds and pro-retinol. Robin has been inside my membership. She's taught the women in there about acne. You have a great Instagram, Clear Skin Lab, or that actual course that you have. But I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about acne from Robin. And I know if any of you have been listening to the podcast for a little bit, you know I struggle with acne a lot. That was a huge part of the reason why I even took the birth control pill in the first place. And something that I feel like still goes in waves. Like I went through your course, Robin, and it helped me. I don't know if you can tell with my skin, but it really did help, like using different topicals.
Yeah, I DM'd you and was like, okay, your skin looks really good right now.
I'm like, well, it's because of the recommendations in your course. There's always more that you can learn. And like sometimes, you know, I'm obviously like my whole world is minerals. And it's like you can only get so deep into a topic and then you're like, I'm just going to refer out. That's kind of how I feel with acne and how deep it can get, especially when people have tried a lot of different things. And so today I'm excited because we're going to dig into the different types of acne, maybe like, you know, a little bit on face mapping, which I think will be interesting. Possible root causes of acne and how that is going to change how you're going to treat that. And then things like Accutane, spironolactone, things that we see women using all the time to treat that. So let's dig into the types of acne first. And I feel like that goes right along with their root causes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of why they're named the way they are. So I kind of separate acne causes or types into five main categories. So we have hormonal, meaning some sort of hormone mechanism is driving the reason for the acne lesion, inflammation, infection, irritation, and stress. And the hardest part is you can have more than one at the same time. And in fact, I would say more severe acne cases typically are a combination of like hormonal and inflammation and maybe even infection. So while I think understanding the acne type and your root cause is important and it can empower you on what to focus on more, every type still needs the same foundation, which is what you teach, right? I mean, it's getting your minerals optimized. It's looking at blood sugar and balanced nutrition and adequate nutrients and vitamins and managing stress. So I think those acne types can be helpful when it comes to details, but it's not where I would have someone start. Like, meaning I wouldn't say take DIM to target estrogen or some sort of hormone. I would really encourage people to start building their foundation first.
And I think that makes sense. And we were kind of chatting before we hit record about how, you know, everyone, whether it's an acne issue or a hormone issue, we tend to think that ours is different, right? We're like, nope, but my acne is different because it shows up on this part of my face, or it looks like this, or it only happens after I eat this. And while I do think it's, I mean, no one knows your body like you do. Obviously, I feel like that's true for everyone. But when I think of acne, it's one of those things that it's so heavily marketed towards women. For like, okay, if this is happening to you, then try this product or remove this food or do this specific protocol. Whereas, I mean, I look at acne as more of a symptom, and it's your body, you know, communicating with you and telling you something is off. So it's difficult. And while we might want to be like, okay, for hormonal acne, you do X, Y, and Z, it's like there's an imbalance, and it's usually coming from a much deeper place.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, like you said, that foundation still needs to be built, but it is still helpful to know what your root cause is. For example, if someone has acne, let's say on their forehead and on their back, and they're doing all the things that are hormonal acne, they might not see much of a change, because that might mean the type or the location tends to be more gut-related and infection-related. So it's examples like that where your type of acne and your root cause, it will impact maybe the details of what you need to do, but that doesn't ever mean skip the minerals, skip the blood sugar balancing nutrition, skip the stress support. You always start with that, and then you can fine-tune with the details of your acne type.
Do you want to give that was a really helpful example, I feel like. Do you want to give an example for each of the types?
Yeah, in terms of how to maybe think through that.
Like how it might appear.
Yeah. So first of all, we do have a free acne quiz that takes people through this. So it will guide you to your most dominant type. And I emphasize that because you might have more than one, which is, I know, so frustrating. For hormonal acne, I would typically say mostly chin and jawline. It might be cystic. You might notice it after certain foods, like high amounts of dairy, cow's dairy, high amounts of sugar. Now, there are ways you can fix that, so I don't want people to run away from those foods. But those are some initial thoughts. Infection acne, I typically see it more along the forehead, potentially back, chest, shoulders. It can still be on the cheeks. You might or might not have some gut issues. Infection acne will often either improve or worsen with topical or oral antibiotics. Stress acne is typically identified after stressful events, or it's kind of like you've ruled out the other things and you can tell it's when stress pops up in your life. Everyone pretty much experiences that in their life. Irritation is usually more topical related. So it's like an allergy to a product or an ingredient or your pillowcase or your laundry detergent, or you're wearing hats and it's sweating along the hairline, stuff like that. Usually people have identified that before they end up getting to me. And then inflammatory acne is usually involved, period. I mean, unless you're just having like little pustules or whiteheads, usually inflammation is irritated skin, red or purple, usually cheek, jawline, forehead, it can be anywhere. So that one, most of the time, people also have an inflammation level to some extent.
Yeah, especially probably if it's more like red and everything. That makes sense. And I feel like some of those could be even, it just shows you how different they can be, but it's like a lot of them can appear in the same spot. So the next thing I wanted to go into is that face mapping post that you did on Instagram that everyone loved. I know I shared it in my stories because it's a question that I get a lot when it comes to acne is, well, if it's here or here in my face, this face map says that it means this. So should I only focus on that? So do you kind of want to, and I'm going to link the face map, the post that Robin did in the show notes, but do you want to kind of walk us through face mapping? Is it helpful? Is it accurate? How do you, or do you use it or do you not recommend using it with clients?
Yeah, I feel like we have to touch on this, even though it's a topic I did not want to make a post about, but it's one of our most asked questions, opened email, like people want to know about the face mapping. And so the reason I don't love talking about it, because I don't want to oversimplify how complex acne really is. And like you said, it's really a symptom of something else. And so I think a lot of those face mapping maps make it seem so simple. Like, oh, if I have a pimple between my eyes, I need to do a liver cleanse or I need to take a liver supplement. And it just skips the big picture. However, that being said, I still think paying attention to the location of your lesions can guide you to maybe what to consider more of or what to give more attention to or even just what to experiment with in some ways, but never skipping the foundational work. And so, for example, I've mentioned this earlier, but if you, one of the most common ones, and I'm sure your audience sees this, is chin acne, jawline acne, especially pre-period, might be cystic or like nodules, mainly like deep and painful. Those are all pretty hormonal type scenarios. And in that case, I wouldn't say you need to go directly take DIM or directly take some hormone balancing supplement, but rather, yes, it may be coming from a hormonal signal. yes, it clearly is linked to your cycle if it's every cycle pre-period. So what do? You start with the foundation stone. You start with everything you've talked about on all your podcasts. You start with minerals, which help make and signal hormones. You start with repleting nutrients like vitamin E, vitamin A. You start with balancing your blood sugar. And we'll talk about time expectations later in this podcast, but give that time, and the hormonal mechanisms that are often triggering those hormones that are triggering acne will typically regulate and resolve the acne.
I think too, it can be confusing when you look at one of those face maps, because say you do have that hormonal area, like the chin and the jawline, but it might, like, yeah, it could be hormonal, but what if that person has a ton of gut issues that are driving up estrogen, you know, it's, or stress hormones. So it's like, I think this is why it is so difficult to just say like, oh, it's just hormonal, because that person could work just on DIM, just on like taking things that are going to reduce that, but it might not work long term, or they're taking those supplements forever because the issue is really in their gut and like poor digestion. So I think that's like, you know, that's why the face mapping can be really confusing for people. I always see them and they're always a little bit different. I really like yours because it doesn't just say like it's like, you know, back and chest, gut, infections, inflammation, sweat. Like it's not just like liver, gallbladder, like large intestine, small intestine. I feel like that can be, it's kind of like, well, what do you do from there? What do you think, like, what's the most common type of acne that you see in practice?
It's definitely it's actually probably a tie between inflammation and infection. And even our quiz results, those are like the top two.
Really? I feel like people wouldn't always think of infection.
Oh, wait, did I say? I meant to say hormonal and infection. Yeah, hormonal. Hormonal and infection are like the top two.
So talk about the infection a little bit, because I don't know if everyone's really going to know what that means. What's going to be the main driver, like an actual infection on top of their skin?
It can be that, or it can be like a gut infection or even a systemic infection. But topically, the skin has such a big microbiota, just like the gut. And the gut really sets the stage for what's happening on the skin. So, I mean, this is why dermatologists will often give topical antibiotics, but they also give oral antibiotics, and both can clear people's skin, but it's because it's, you know, suppressing the infection. Topically, though, there can be bacterial infections. There can also be fungal infections, both can which irritate the skin. And if you have a systemic gut infection, bacteria-wise, like staph, or you've got something like H. pylori, something that's essentially keeping your gut microbiota out of whack, that can show up on the skin. And like I said, that's because the gut is really setting the stage for the microbiota on other areas of the body.
And what would like fungal type, like a fungally driven acne look like?
Yeah, that one is, first of all, super hard to actually diagnose, because even the topical testing is not super accurate. So the best way to really know is to trial some things topically and see what happens. But from what I see topically, it's usually more like little small bumps. And sometimes it's even just texture. People don't necessarily see it as much as they feel their skin have those little bumps. And it can show up anywhere. It doesn't have to just be the forehead. Those topical infections can be anywhere on the skin.
Yeah, I tend to see a lot of that happen as women start working on mineral balance and protocols and stuff. It's like, it's almost like their body's trying to like purge it.
For sure. And this is why, and you heard me emphasize this inside the course, acne really needs a two-pronged approach. The inside out is so huge, which is what we talk about all the time with clients. But the topical lens needs attention too. And I think in the conventional world, we only pay attention to it topically. And then sometimes in like holistic world, we only pay attention to it internally, but it truly needs both. And as you've noticed with your skin, like once you added different topicals, it kind of leveled it up even more.
Yeah. And because it's, I mean, realistically, like we're always going to be going through some season. Like my skin is definitely very stress related acne at this point. For myself, it was definitely hormonally and infection driven before, because antibiotics did work for my skin and topical antibiotics for the most part. And so it's like one of those things where I'm stressed, didn't get enough sleep, anything like that, not eating enough, you know, that's immediately where I see it. That's how like I first know that I'm like, okay, got to slow down, got to chill out. But using some of the mandelic acid, don't even know what it is because I'm just like, Robin told me to take it, so I'm putting it on my skin. Even just using that and adding that in, like I did have a purging at first, which I was like, oh, this sucks. But it's, you know, just reminding yourself that it's going to be worth it. And now it's like very consistent and I don't really have to worry about it, which is really cool. But it's like I did need a little bit more support than what I was currently giving my skin.
Well, and even if you keep up with things like that, like mandelic acid is an active and that can help with exfoliation. And if you incorporate that into your routine on a regular basis, you're preventing that pore, that follicle, from being congested with sebum and then showing up as acne. But if you, in a way, just kind of keep that flowing, it is reducing the likelihood of that building up and turning into a zit.
Yeah, because I think like me and a few other women that were on the call when you taught that class for my membership, we all had kind of similar, like just like small whiteheads, like nothing super crazy. And you're like, if you probably just use something topically as like an exfoliator, I believe you referred to it as, and like that would get rid of it. And it was just, it's just crazy because you think that you do all these things to take care of your skin, that you've tried everything. And then it's something as, I would say, simple, because it's, I mean, it's two ingredients in the product. It's nothing crazy. As simple as that, I'm like, okay, so my skin literally just needed exfoliation.
And I think highlighting the fact that you went through a purge is important, because that's so normal. And we actually have like entire lessons in our course on purging, because it's just part of it. It's almost like, let's celebrate it, because it means you're pushing gunk out. But I think a lot of people freak out and think that whatever they're doing is not working for them, or they're reacting to it. And there are certainly cases where you might not tolerate a product, but pushing through that purge is important. And then keeping that sebum or that follicle open so that sebum doesn't build up is just going to help you maintain the clear skin.
And it's the same thing that happens with hormones. Like I think about I've even had people message me that they haven't gone through my course. We've never worked together. They just follow the recommendations that I give on this podcast and on Instagram. And I'm sure that you've gotten a million from your mineral mocktail guide that you have, but people are like, oh, I've been adding adrenal cocktails, I've been eating regularly, all this stuff. And like, my skin's freaking out, my periods are crazy. And they're going through that like estrogen kind of wave. I call them estrogen waves of like, you know, estrogen's up and then it's down. But I know that that happens with skin too. So can you talk a little bit about like why this starts happening, especially when you're doing the internal and external approach to this whole like purge? Like it's like an internal and external purge. It's kind of crazy. Why does it happen? And like what can women do to help it?
Yeah. So I would say topically, it's because you're depending on what products you're using, whether it's adding oils for the first time, which purging is very common with being new to oils, or adding actives, like maybe that's a retinoid or a quality vitamin C or an acid, mandelic acid, salicylic acid, you are probably going to pull up sebum that's been in the follicle for a long time. Acne starts building deep in the hair follicle before it ever actually shows up as a zit. And so typically adding some of those products is pulling up sebum that's been in there, going to show up as acne. You're pulling that out. And that's what we consider a purge. And that can last weeks. I mean, that can last like 6 weeks for people. So that's kind of what's happening on a topical lens. And then internally, when we start adding minerals and we start adding nutrients like vitamin A and vitamin E, which are big ones we talk about in the program, you're pulling things from the tissues like estrogen and iron. And when you start moving hormones and iron around the body, you may temporarily feel worse, not just in skin, but I mean, you've talked about period symptoms, pain, lots of things. But because, as I mentioned earlier, hormones can be one of the big triggers, one of the mechanisms that triggers the acne, when you start moving that stuff and you're getting estrogen in your blood, I mean, that can trigger temporarily worsened acne.
And I think that it's with the skin stuff, especially, I mean, if you struggle with your skin, it's so hard when it gets worse. You want to freak out because you're doing everything or have tried everything or feel like you have in order to improve it. Same thing with your cycles. Like if you already deal with period pain, it really sucks when you're making all these changes and you see some improvements in other areas, but your periods are still painful. And I do think sometimes it's something deeper, you know, even with mineral stuff, it's like maybe there is a deeper digestive issue that we need to deal with. And I'm sure that obviously with infection being one of your most common types of acne, I'm sure that's very, very common, but it just shows you how powerful those changes can be. I'm not surprised. So my skin was, I think it was almost 2 months that I purged for, but it was like baby purge. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, I think I'm purging. And then it was like, oh no, you're definitely purging. But now it's like very consistent, which is nice.
I'm glad you had some tools to get you through that. And sometimes the purging is worse than others. And I really think that depends on the stage of someone's just total health, but also where their skin is at. Because sometimes it can be an actually pretty severe purge where they're getting more cystic, more painful stuff. And so much of the hormonal acne triggers are related to the the ratios, I would say, or the levels between different hormones. So for example, if you have low progesterone compared to testosterone, you might not even have high testosterone, but simply having low progesterone in ratio to that can trigger acne. Because most of hormonal acne is driven by androgens. It's driven by testosterone. It can come from too low or too high progesterone. And with estrogen, it's typically the ratio between progesterone or testosterone. So that's where it gets so tricky, because you can't just like test one level and know where it's coming from. It's really understanding how these hormones work together, because they really do communicate.
Hey, Amanda here, just giving you a quick break, hopefully a break for your brain in the middle of this podcast episode, to remind you that if you haven't gone through our free training, Optimizing Hormone Health Through Mineral Balance, we really do recommend starting there. And the main reason for that is because you're going to hear us say things like mineral foundation, having a solid foundation, are you putting the foundations in place? Especially as we get deeper and deeper into different hormonal topics and specific imbalances in the body, the mineral foundation is always going to be so essential. So if you haven't watched the free training, you can find it in our show notes, or you can go to hormonehealingrd.com and it's going to be right on that front page there. But we really recommend starting there so that you can understand how is your current mineral status, how do you assess this, and how to get started with all that, just so you can get as much as you possibly can out of the rest of the podcast episodes. But that's it. I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. And nothing happens in isolation in the body. So I guarantee you that someone that thinks they're struggling with hormonal acne, it's like, okay, well, how are your bowel movements? How's your digestion? Are you bloated? Like, how's your sleep, energy, all that kind of stuff? I feel like if you really sit down and think about it, I'm sure that there's other things going on, but it's just easy when it's like, oh, I have acne on my chin, it's hormonal, you know, that then you tend to want to focus on it. But even I just think of like, you know, if someone's got a lot of excess iron going on, or say maybe they add in like adrenal cocktails and they're using like beef liver, eating it or taking a supplement, and they start to notice like they're starting to get rid of some of that excess iron. I mean, yes, it's iron, but it can still trigger hormonal looking acne for sure. How long does it typically take? I know we kind of talked about this, but do you want to outline, you have a really good post on this on Instagram too. It's like a visual post, but how long does it take to see improvements in skin, or like, what is that like, you know, kind of purging and then getting better phase look like?
The short answer is it's never fast enough because with skin, I mean, I personally have been through major psoriasis, so I know like the desperation of just like, please just make it go away faster. And it's conflicting when someone wants to take a natural approach, but they also want their skin cleared yesterday. So I'm really big on proper expectations. And so typically what I say is in the first 1 to 4 weeks of making changes, most of what you're going to see is probably texture related, like topically, especially if you're new to properly hydrating your skin and moisturizing your skin and cleansing and all those things. So usually there's not like massive changes within the first month. Now, depending on what your diet looks like or inflammation levels, that might be unique. You might see things calm down faster. 5 to 8 weeks is typically where I'd expect people to see reduction in new lesions, more hydrated skin, and reduction of visible inflammation. And then 9 to 12 weeks is typically when we would say expect the longer term stuff. And I'll even tell you, some of my one-on-one clients took 7 months to see their skin turn a corner. And this is where it can be so hard, because you're doing the things, your skin got worse from purging, you're still taking action and it's not really doing much, but skin takes time. It's like one of the last things to respond. You might have better energy, your periods might be improving, your digestion might be improving, but skin might be the last to change or turn a corner. And it's so frustrating when that's only thing you want to change and it's the last one, but that's just honestly how it is. And we give a lot of tools to help speed that up as much as you can, but I also don't want to give false hope. It really just will take time.
Yeah. And I just think about it like, if you've dealt with skin issues your whole life, if it takes you a year to fix it and then have consistency and not even to have better skin, but to know what to do, I think that's one of the coolest things about the Clear Skin Lab, that program that you have, is because, and I'm sure obviously clients are going to get this working one-on-one as well, but it's like, you know, if something comes up, like if you think, oh, I think this is infection related, you can go look under like the fungal or the bacterial sections and look at I'm going to try these and see if my skin responds to this. Or if you have that history of maybe yours was like infection and hormonal, and then you know what fixed it, and then maybe it starts to pop up in the future. It's not like you don't know what to do. You're not back at square one. And I think it's the same thing with hormones and everything and like digestive gut health too. It's like you have to just understand how those systems of the body work at least a little bit foundationally. And then you can really get like, okay, so this is what I think might be going wrong. I'm actually going to pay attention to my body instead of just freaking out about this symptom. And then you can kind of move forward. So it's like, it could be a year, 7 months, but it's like, then you don't really have to worry about it after that.
And I would say if someone feels like they're doing all the things, testing can really help because in my experience with one-on-one clients, the ones that have taken the longest typically either have a pretty big gut imbalance, infection or something going on in the gut, or the clients that I've seen take a long time have really high calcium levels in hair tissue mineral tests. So stuff's going on with thyroid at the cellular level, or super low ceruloplasmin levels, which we can get into some discussions about that in acne. But I do think it helps me help the client set an expectation if I can see kind of how off certain levels are and know what we might expect in terms of time.
Yeah, I think that's like the beauty of testing if you can do it. And if you're in, a lot of people are like, but I've already spent so much money on my skin. It's like, but it's, you know, if everyone thinks their skin is unique to them, like it is. So then like, if you do some sort of testing, then you'll be able to see what's actually going on. So what would you say as far as, cause I know we talked about like foundations, right? Setting a solid foundation so that you can eventually see those changes in your skin. What micronutrients do you think are the most important for our skin?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, there's so many we could go down rabbit holes on. I would say, I think I'll answer it in terms of what micronutrients do I think don't get enough attention. Because we do know zinc, magnesium, there's a ton that are pretty popular for acne. You can like, you know, you do the average Google and that type of stuff shows up. But I think there are a lot that are dismissed. One of the big ones being vitamin A. And so, I mean, there's some really interesting and really high dose studies with vitamin A, and this actually kind of connects to Accutane too, but we need vitamin A for a proper thyroid function, for proper utilization or recycling of iron, for utilization of ceruloplasmin, which was a study actually that did, actually this was done on rats, so we have to keep that in mind, but they looked at Accutane with rats and found that within 24 hours, their ceruloplasmin went up like four times just with the use of Accutane. And it's a synthetic derivative of vitamin A. So I haven't seen that study done on humans or looked at ceruloplasmin specifically to acne in humans, but it's just so interesting when we know the mechanisms of vitamin A and copper and some of those enzymes. So I'm getting off track here, but vitamin A is one that I absolutely would have people give attention to and start with. I think beef liver is the safest, easiest way to do that. Sometimes with clients, we'll use really high dose. Just for reference, the RDA is 700 micrograms, and there's studies that have used 90,000 micrograms for months and saw no toxicity issues with vitamin A. It really does help speed up the healing, especially for clients who have more inflamed, especially like cystic, painful acne. I've just seen high dose vitamin A really help the pace at which things progress. And then another one would probably be bioavailable copper. We need that for so many enzymes, including ceruloplasmin, which I just mentioned. Also there's so many. We need it for like so many.
Copper does everything. We did a whole episode on copper and iron. So if you guys are like, why do we need copper? Like, please listen to that episode.
It's also required for tyrosinase, which has a role in melanin production in the skin. So that one I think needs more attention, especially when most of the time people start with zinc for skin because there's just so much information out there. And while yes, that actually is important for skin, we need to balance that with usable copper. Another one would be vitamin E. And I think the primary role for that with acne is the antioxidant role. There's a lot of information about oxidative stress and acne, and especially if you have that more inflamed type, which like I mentioned earlier, most people have a level of it. And so just with the typical standard American diet or, you know, even real food diets, a lot of them are imbalanced in terms of fatty acids. So I think vitamin E can play a big role. And I know you, we've talked about this before, but you even mentioned sometimes you see people purging from vitamin E introduction.
Yeah, like just from adding in vitamin E.
In terms of skin.
Yeah, it's just acne purging. And then I'll say like, you can either ride with it and just see like how long it takes. Most people will wait it out. Some people freak out if they've never had acne before, and I'll just have them stop it, wait a little bit longer, and then add it in a little bit slower.
Yeah, that's the thing, is so many things can cause purge. I mean, I typically have people add minerals and vitamin E at the same time, so it's not always distinguishable of what's causing what there. But it's, I'm typically helping people try to go through and push through a purge.
Yeah.
And I mean, we could go through each mineral. Magnesium is important. Potassium is a big one. And I think that deserves being highlighted just because so many people aren't getting enough. That plays a big role in testosterone too, which is one of the big hormonal drivers. And that plays a big role in insulin sensitivity, which if we're going to, you know, even with hormonal acne, there's different hormones that can drive it. So I mentioned androgens is a big one. Insulin is a big one. IGF-1 is a big one. And so potassium really plays a role, at least for sure, we know, in insulin sensitivity and testosterone. So that mineral deserves a little extra love in as well.
And I think people are always, when they think of acne and foods that are going to help, it's often things they're trying to remove. And I'm always like, we need to focus on what we're adding in and not always necessarily what we're removing.
Yeah. And I actually, so I'm a big fan of eventually getting people to the widest diet they can have. However, I have seen if they're not really in a good state cellularly, mineral-wise, temporarily pulling back on some certain foods can really help speed it up. And I talk about that in the course of which ones to maybe look at. But I'm very careful to tell people don't remove these forever. They don't need to be removed forever. You can usually add back dairy. You can usually add back, I mean, I don't really say people should be totally sugar-free at all, but there are, you know, if you're not balancing your meals, if you're eating a ton of just obviously high sugar products, we do know, depending on your insulin sensitivity, that can trigger acne. So I kind of talk about doing a diet experiment and doing it for a maximum of 12 weeks while implementing all these other things. And usually you can add back a lot of those so that you can have a very wide diet and you're not stuck on some sort of restriction. I really don't want that for people long term to be able to maintain good skin.
Do people freak out that you have dairy regularly? Because you'll show like your raw milk smoothies and stuff.
I do often get questions more about the raw milk than dairy itself. But I, with psoriasis, pulling out dairy for a couple years, I mean, I knew it triggered my skin. I didn't know I had all these other deeper things to address at that time, but it did temporarily help. And so because I personally know how emotional acne is, I really want to give people tools right up front to just try to calm their skin down ASAP. So I do think temporarily pulling back on some foods can do that. But I also really try to emphasize that's not the long-term goal. And I give strategies in terms of how to add things back, like dairy or, you know, some people truly do have gluten sensitivities for their skin. Yeah. And typically that shows up more with inflammation, red or purple skin. So I'm cautious about that. I want people to have a good food relationship, but there are certain foods that can trigger it or make it worse. And so I provide some education around there and how to do a short-term experiment and then add them back.
People often know. I find that people typically know what is going to be, because especially if you've been dealing with skin issues for a long time, it's like most people have done some experimentation or they might see a pattern over time or like, oh, whenever I even this, I have some clients that know the type of dairy. They're like, I can eat any dairy except for this specific type, or I just can't eat this brand of thing because I notice it irritates my skin. So it's like, if you know that you see that reaction, I don't think it's bad to avoid that food even for a time period.
What's also interesting is, and this would maybe be a whole other podcast, but there can be iodine or fluoride in certain dairy products, depending on the type of milk, especially if it was, let's say, skim milk, for example. If they diluted it, basically what they do is they make milk solids and then they dilute it with water. And so if they're using fluorinated water, there are definitely people who skin-wise are very reactive to the fluoride. And so they might notice skim milk worsens my skin. And this is actually shown in research too, that skim milk worsened acne. And they kind of just threw it up like, we don't know why. And I question whether or not it's the fluoride, but that wasn't said in the study. So I think it's important, and I talk about this in the course, to pay attention to, the categories. cow's milk is typically more aggravating than goats or sheep. And then within that, is it organic? Is raw dairy triggering or is it just conventional? And then what type? Is it whole milk? Is it skim milk? So this is why it truly needs to be discussed as an experiment. You just got to get to know your body.
I really like that though. It's like looking at it more as like an experiment of like, here, I'm going to do this for this time being because my body's a little more sensitive right now. But once I work on that solid foundation and, you know, reducing stress by, I feel like we can add a ton of stress just by worrying about acne and all that kind of stuff. So it's like I feel like when people have a plan and they have an approach where they're like, okay, I'm going to give this the next 6 to 10 months, it can be stress relieving. So you mentioned vitamin A toxicity, Accutane a bit before. Let's talk about how Accutane works, because the amount of people I've seen that have done this more than once is alarming.
Yeah. So nowadays it's referred to as isotretinoin. Accutane was kind of an older brand name, but it's the same mechanism. And essentially what it is it's a synthetic derivative of vitamin A. It's 13-cis retinoic acid. So it's a fake vitamin A. And how it works is actually a couple different ways. It's anti-inflammatory. It has some antibacterial properties. So even with infection acne, that's kind of why it's like the last call. It's such an aggressive medication that does so many things that they don't really know why it might work for one person. It just typically works. It does shrink and dry up sebaceous glands, therefore less sebum. And that's kind of like a long-term thing. And it's not just located on the face. It's going to do that whole body-wise. And then that's kind of where they talk about it from a dermatological perspective. We know there's a lot more to retinoic acid. And so when you're giving a fake synthetic retinoic acid, you're blocking what your real retinoids can do, like your real vitamin A. And that plays a role in thyroid health, in making of ceruloplasmin, in vitamin D activation. So there's a lot of ways in which I think it can work for acne too, or why it works. Not saying that's the route I would go, but there's some indirect ways in terms of affecting thyroid health, affecting cellular utilization of thyroid hormone. And those are things that I would look at and be like, well, let's actually give you vitamin A instead so we can still get all those benefits and not have to use such a heavy medication that can have some pretty significant side effects.
I know it always like blows my mind that I'm like, okay, if we're using this really intense form of vitamin A, why don't we just try a more natural form of vitamin A?
You know what? It's mind-blowing to me because vitamin A is talked about a lot with acne. Retinoids on the skin, there's all sorts of versions of retin A, retinaldehyde, retinoic acid. We give a lot of attention to using it topically. We know synthetic versions work with things like isotretinoin. Why does nobody talk about using food? And it's just there's legitimate studies on it. I just don't know why that gets skipped.
I know I feel like it's very aggressive. A lot of women then have to take birth control. They have to get on some sort of form of, usually it's the pill or the IUD when they start that, which that can have a whole other impact on your skin and your minerals like copper. I see so much copper imbalance with whether it's the pill or I see it too with the Mirena. Everyone thinks it's just from the copper IUD. I actually see a lot more with hormonal birth control. And of course, you know, that copper is so important. Like you mentioned, like it's important for our metabolism, which is definitely going to impact our skin, digestion, all that stuff. So it does, like it kind of blows my mind a little bit. So it's interesting. Basically, it could help with many different types. So if you respond well to Accutane, it doesn't necessarily tell you what your root cause is.
No, unfortunately, just because it's addressing so many different versions of it.
I think that makes sense, though.
And I mean, as you mentioned, they typically require you to be on birth control at the same time. So then it's like, okay, now you're on multiple things that are impacting it.
Yeah, and then you really don't know.
And then unfortunately, many people are on it more than once. As you mentioned, they might be on a couple rounds of it before they see it work. And I'll have to send you that study. Again, it was done on rats, but essentially they used Accutane and they did it until they depleted these rats' copper levels. And then it was like not effective until they gave copper back. So we know there's such a huge relationship between copper and vitamin A and how many enzymes it impacts. And I believe that that's a huge part of why Accutane works, is it's manipulating that pathway or that mechanism. But that's just not how it's talked about.
And like you mentioned before, it can take longer. So with Accutane, yes, you know, people are taking it for months. And I think people kind of know like this could take some time to see a result, but it's almost guaranteed. Like not quite for everyone, but it's pretty much guaranteed that like this will get rid of your acne. Whereas say someone did blood work, they're looking at copper and retinol, like your active vitamin A in your blood and everything, and their ceruloplasmin levels. And that can take time to really change those. So I feel like I think it's like a time thing and a convenience thing. What about spironolactone? How does that one work?
So a couple different ways, kind of a direct and indirect one. The biggest method that's talked about is that it lowers androgens, testosterone specifically. And as I mentioned, that can be one of the biggest hormonal drivers to acne. So typically, if spironolactone works for you, it's an indication that you're likely dealing with a androgen type of acne. Now, it's a potassium-sparing medication, so it does impact potassium and sodium levels. It will secrete sodium and help you retain potassium. Well, doing that is going to impact aldosterone levels, which then impacts androgen levels. So I also think there's a mechanism that it's specifically relating to how it's manipulating the minerals outside of directly reducing testosterone. And then there's issues when you do that, when you mess with those minerals. When people tell me that spironolactone worked for them, it's usually an indication to take a deeper assessment at what's going on with androgens and what might be driving androgens, and then what's going on with your minerals, potassium, sodium, and that whole gamut.
So we talked about with Accutane, like some of the downsides. Obviously, it can impact thyroid, liver health, vitamin D receptors, and so much more, even just how you're balancing out copper and iron in the body. What about spironolactone? Are there any concerns when you take that and maybe minerals?
I would say it's much more of a mild medication if we're comparing it to isotretinoin. But with minerals, yes. I mean, when you start secreting sodium, you're going to potentially lose other minerals. And that's not going to happen fast, but it's usually going to happen over time. So you give it 6 months, 12 months. I mean, people are on that for a long time. And then you might be running into low levels of calcium, low levels of magnesium, low levels of sodium. So typically that stuff's going to show up later.
I tend to see low mineral levels in general on hair tests of people that take it.
Have you seen how long it takes?
I mean, most of the time those people have been on it for at least a few years.
I mean, I get it. It's depending on their type of acne, it can work pretty well, but it's not as scary as some of the other ones. So it can be kind of sold as a less harmful one. I think it's just important to think about why is it working. And that's with anything. Like, I don't want to shame medication options or people who have gone down those routes at all. I'm just always thinking, why did it work? And what like mechanism wise, what else could we consider if that is working for you?
And if it didn't, you know, it's like, that's important to take into consideration too. Cause it's, I feel like I find that depending on someone's dermatologist, they're going to get the same recommendation over and over, even though it did not work in the past. And I think it can be frustrating.
Yeah. Typically, if they go to a dermatologist, they usually start with some sort of topical, maybe go through a couple different changes there. Then they might try birth control. Then they might try spironolactone. And then eventually, maybe antibiotics. And then it usually gets to something like Accutane. So by the time people see me, they have usually tried numerous medications. They've tried all sorts of diets and they're just like, I don't know what to do. And it does help when I can go through those medications and get more insight into, did this make it worse? Did this do anything? And that can kind of tell me what we might need to look at from a root cause perspective.
That's really cool. So let's end with talking more about the topical piece, because we don't even have to go into quite specifics, but I think this can be very confusing because obviously, a lot of the stuff that I share and that you share is about like this internal stuff. Like, what is that foundation that you're building? Minerals, all that kind of stuff. But what about topicals? Like, what do you think is most important when it comes to building that kind of like skin supportive routine?
Yeah, I think before anyone gets into actives or some of the stuff we talked about earlier with like mandelic acid, you have to start by supporting your skin barrier and, if needed, repairing the skin barrier. And I'm by no means an esthetician. I collaborate with a lot of estheticians, but everyone would say that. Skin barrier is first. It's really building your defense system from the external world. And I really do like utilizing oils. I know there's a lot of controversy around that. Even in the esthetician world, there's controversy around that. There's an integrative dermatologist who's given a lecture on acne, and he talked about how part of what's going on in the skin with acne is a deficiency of ceramides in the hair follicle. And ceramides is kind of like a type of oil. And so he was a big fan of using topical ceramides and topical oils to help nourish what's going on in that follicle. The hard part is, and this is all over the internet, is people will say, I react to oils. And I had a question, is it a reaction or is it a purge? Because you're going to pull up stuff, especially if you've never used oils before. So I'm a big fan of utilizing oils, and we help people kind of get through that purge stage and utilize, you know, certain oils, because you don't want to throw coconut oil on your face, which has some antibacterial properties. So oils or proper moisturization is a big one. Cleansing the skin, I mean, that's kind of foundational. Just got to wash your face. I think for the biggest part is people getting into a skincare routine that they're consistent with too. Yeah. I should go in order. So cleansing's first, or removing your makeup is first. I tend to do that with oil. Cleansing would be next. We talk about introducing some antioxidants, vitamin C being a big one. It also helps your sunscreen work better in terms of protecting you from the sun. And then typically after they've done that for like 2 weeks at least, then we'll talk about introducing actives, whether that's retinoids or mandelic acid, glycolic acid, salicylic acid, stuff like that. So, but you really want to make sure you set the stage first by giving your skin proper hydration and moisturization.
And I think that could even make some people feel better. Like, it's like, you actually don't have to start with all this stuff to begin with. It's more just like, are you actually getting all your makeup off? I mean, I remember when I first started oil cleansing, I think it was right before but after I came off the pill when I was like 20, it was life-changing. I definitely had purging, but I already had bad acne. So I was like, I mean, what's the difference? And my face felt clean and not dry for the first time, because I did use a lot of topical antibacterials and I took antibiotics for a while. So it actually brought that moisture back. And eventually I was one of those people that was just doing oil cleansing and using oil. I didn't use anything else on my skin. And that worked for a while. Like, until it doesn't, which is, I feel like kind of happens with a lot of things with your skin. So it doesn't have to be anything too intense, but I think having the routine is important. And you guys do emphasize that in the course, which I feel like is helpful.
Yeah. And even with oils, like you mentioned, you don't have to spend a bunch of money on stuff. We even have a homemade oil blend to do so that you can have a huge batch for a long time that doesn't have to be crazy expensive products. So taking care of that topical piece is so important. If you do all the internal stuff and you don't give that skin barrier any attention, you might not make progress, because you can have inflammation directly on the skin. You can have infections directly on the skin. You've got to take care of that hair follicle and the sebum and pull that out. So it, like I mentioned earlier, it really is a two-pronged approach. And hopefully those are some initial tips. I also have a free acne guide that we can get you the link for that gives people that free oil recipe. A brand I like, if you're looking for something, is Marie Veronique. I know you have another one that you love. Is it?
I really like Primally Pure's oil. They have like dry skin, normal, oily skin, but they do have essential oils in them. And some people cannot tolerate that.
Yeah. Marie Veronique does not have any essential oils in there. So theirs is pretty plain. And then there's another one. Cora? What's the other?
Cosma.
That was another one.
Yeah. But she's got like squalene oil. I use that like as part of my moisturizer, but she's got a really great like chamomile cleanser. It's not essential oil. It's just like the essence, and it is amazing. It's like the best thing I've ever used. But I think that's the other thing too with skin stuff, like simpler typically is better. And like all those fragrances and essential oils, like that could actually be irritating your skin.
That's why it may be nice for people, especially if they're nervous about doing oils, start with just like squalene or something super basic. Even Marie Veronique's, though they have an esthetician that made all their products, ingredient wise, it does have more than just one oil. So if you're kind of tiptoeing in, start with something that's not expensive, like squalene and simple single oil.
I'll put the link to Cosma in there. She also has a lot. She's an esthetician, and she shares a lot of great information about, she reviews products a lot on her Instagram, like really helpful things. And I'll link the acne guide and your quiz and everything as well. If you were going to give advice to someone listening that's currently struggling with acne after listening to this podcast, like where would you recommend they go and get started with?
I mean, I would say just don't settle. Whatever you take as your next step, if you're not happy with your skin, don't settle with it. Just continue to educate and take steps in towards the direction you want, whether that's maybe focusing on topicals or internal or both at the same time. Coming from a psoriasis I mean, personal story. I remember reading stuff online and just thinking like, that's not right. That couldn't, you can't actually heal psoriasis with food. And I just rolled my eyes at it. And it took me 2 years to kind of get slapped in the face to actually believe that it was possible and take action. So I just want to empower people that your body's sending you a message with symptoms. And that's what's cool is we can take action or not to listen to it and try to interpret what it's trying to tell us.
Really, the random like thing just popped into my head. So I knew your psoriasis story. I feel like you've done a great job like covering that and sharing like your journey through that on your Instagram. Did you also struggle with acne at the same time or was that a separate time?
I had pre-period hormonal acne just for a long time and it was more cyclical. So it would show up always on my chin. It was always cystic and super painful. And those, it's like the moment you clear one up in terms of the hyperpigmentation, like the next one starts brewing. So yeah, I struggled with that even after my psoriasis was improved. I remember my first job being annoyed with having chin acne all the time. So I don't have pictures of that. I'm not as vocal about that part. I just don't have any visuals of it. But yeah, definitely had that as well.
I was just curious. I mean, I feel like I don't really know many women that haven't struggled with acne. So
that's the thing too. I'm so glad you said that because we all have pores. And I don't want people to take this and think that you shouldn't ever get a zit. Like, that's not realistic. We're going to get pimples. We're going to be stressed. And there's a lot of factors. So when there are some times where people will come to apply to work where they literally just have one zit every now and again. And I'm like, that's normal. Like, that's not something that we're going to, like, take away. And so I want to emphasize that.
And people aren't going to show when they're breaking out. Like I don't ever use filters on my stories. I just don't feel right doing it. I want people to know what I look like. And I'll get on there and I have like, especially when I was purging, I had people message me and they're like, oh, you actually like have acne because a huge part of my story is that like I got rid of it. But I still struggle with acne at times. And that's kind of why I reached out to you. And I was like, I think I'm going to do the course because I feel like I am missing that topical piece. And it's always good to dig deeper into that stuff. But yeah, it's like no one's going to show when they're dealing with that stuff. So I feel like we all deal with it.
I can't believe someone DM'd you and was like, oh, you have acne.
I know. People DM me about my tattoos, my acne, when I'm going to have kids. I just shared that it was our anniversary this weekend. And they're like, 7 years. Are you not having kids? I'm like, don't worry, guys. We're going to have babies soon and it'll be great. But yeah, it's just people on Instagram are funny.
Yeah, we definitely have to remember you're getting highlight reels on social media with skin included.
Or filters. I mean, filters cover up everything. So it's definitely, or like even like being out in good lighting. So you're not seeing everything. Everyone has it. If someone never has acne, that's amazing for them. But I think it's pretty normal to see those fluctuations. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, Robin, answering all these questions. I'm going to link all the resources in the show notes. So make sure you guys go check those out and follow Robin on Instagram at Nutrition by Robin with a Y. I feel like people might not know that. Robin with a Y. And take her acne quiz. I'm curious to see what everyone gets for their acne types. Thank you for listening to the Are You Menstrual podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider leaving us a review and sharing the podcast with someone you think it will help. If you are new here, we can't recommend enough to start with our mineral imbalance quiz. This is going to give you an idea if you are at low, moderate, or high risk for mineral imbalances. And then, of course, make sure you follow us on Instagram at HormoneHealingRD and consider signing up for our newsletter. If you like nerding out and you are just loving these podcasts, but maybe you're a little bit more visual and you want to see things too, we go into a ton of detail in our weekly newsletter. So we would love to have you join us there. All right. Thank you. And we will see you in the next episode.